You're listening to Campus Review Radio.
Welcome to HeadX, hosted by Martin Betts. This podcast explores the changing landscape of the higher education sector. Welcome to the Higher Education Experience.
Welcome back to HeadX, everybody, and it's great to be bringing this episode of the podcast from my recent visit to the UK, where I had the chance to meet with a number of vice chancellors and leaders of UK institutions in the midst of some really challenging times that UK universities are facing with public funding, with international context and with student demand. And the guest on HeadX this particular episode is Anthony Finkelstein, who's the Vice Chancellor and President of City University in London. And Anthony is also a Professor of Software System Engineering, being a graduate in Systems Engineering with a Bachelor of Engineering, a Master of Science and PhD. And he's also a Professional Fellow of the Institution of Engineering and Technology and of the British Computer Society. Now, Anthony's a fascinating guest in leading such a interesting university at a particular point in time, but he's also an individual, as we'll find out in this episode, who's provided consultancy to many high-profile companies and government organisations. He's acted as an expert in some complex technology disputes. And the thing that I probed a little bit about his background and I found so interesting is that he was awarded the UCL Entrepreneurial Spirit Awards. And this is an institutional honour for contributions to knowledge transfer as a particular role within universities. He personally has established three successful spin-out companies, including two exits, and has provided professional services, product software, and an innovative software service as part of his academic work. He's in this way, he's demonstrated his particular interest in embedding public engagement in all aspects of the work of engineering, and was awarded the UCL Provost Award for Institutional Leadership in Public Engagement, a prestigious award for a distinctive form of contribution in university leadership. He's now looking forward to a very different City University of London at a time of great change and challenge for UK universities, as he'll explain, having been appointed to lead the institution that emerges on the 1st of August this year from one of what might be a large number of forthcoming mergers. His merger that he will emerge from is of the institution he currently leads, together with St George's University of London, which is based upon a medical institute in South London in Tooting. And we'll hear a lot more from Anthony's story and the story of the past and the future of City University of London straight after this message from our sponsors.
Short on resources to enhance your university's online learning objectives? OES's collaborative approach ensures program success while offering flexibility across disciplines. Our tailored solutions uphold academic rigour and your reputation. Choose OES for adaptable, high-quality online learning experiences.
Anthony, welcome to the HeadX podcast.
Thank you very much indeed. It's good to be here.
And lovely to have you on our show. And Anthony, you've got a very technology-rich, and might I describe it as partnership and engagement-oriented journey that you've taken through both your own personal academic, but then subsequently your broader leadership career to date in higher education. I wonder if there's a story behind Anthony's journey that you might share with us of what formative experiences might have led you to be so technology focused?
I mean, technology, that since I was first able to start taking things apart and play with Lego, that's been something that's been with me ever since I was small. I'm the son of an engineer, the son of an information scientist. The trajectory that takes me to digital technologies is not a difficult one to map out. The engagement story is actually, I think, more interesting. I mean, I was, uh, I, I was what's called an LV baby. So I became a first research position at Imperial College was on the LV program. So it was the big program intended for the UK to compete with Japan and globally in what was then artificial intelligence and associated software technologies. So I started on large industrial collaborative programs. And then that's sort of been a stripe that's gone all the way through the practice of my career. Virtually every project I've engaged in has been one that's been win with industry or with other disciplines contributing. I mean, you wouldn't, you know, that's engineering for you. You know, being a software engineer, it really wouldn't have made sense otherwise.
Very good. And that's taken you to become Vice Chancellor of City University. And I don't know a lot about City, but what I do know is that it's very well located. It has a reputation as quite an innovative university with quite a strong historical focus on not only high quality education relevant to business and the professions, which I think dates back more than 150 years. But what would you say has been distinctive about what City has done up until this point and the way that it's gone about its work in one of the world's leading cities for higher education in such a sort of congested marketplace for higher education provision? What makes City special?
Well, and the City is one of a relatively small group of what is known at, of what were known originally as CATS, Colleges of Advanced Technology. Its history is that it started up as a technical institution, founded, in fact, and supported by the guilds of the City of London to support the sort of trades and crafts in the creative fringe of the city as trades and crafts moved out of the core of the City of London. So it had that sort of grounded technical basis, right, as you say, from its original foundation. The CATS became universities more or less the same time as the so-called plate glass universities became universities. But they have this distinctive orientation to practice. Now, along the way, some of that by the general homogenizing pressure of the sector has been a bit washed out. People have a very narrow view of what it is to be a university. But cities kept that focus on practice and professions. It's what characterizes it as an institution. It's grown substantially during that period. Perhaps the largest part of its development was the fact that it was one of the pioneers in business education, as befitting its location and mission. So, I mean, now everybody seems to have a business school. But that wasn't always the case, and City was able to establish a very well known and high quality business school focusing on postgraduate business education. Increasingly now, however, we are a much broader undergraduate institution.
You are indeed. And in researching this interview and your background and the background of the institution, I've seen descriptions of the mission of your university as being about building successful careers and developing leaders for the world of work, of undertaking research at the frontier of practice, and particularly doing both of those things by being open and outward facing. And the cynic in me would say that you mentioned that homogenized word of the context of many universities, that I sense that all universities claim to do those three things to some extent. And I wonder if you can help me really pierce into what has been different about how City has pursued that vision and strategy in recent times, maybe with some examples of how you achieve those three things.
Actually, I mean, I'm quite proud of the fact that I think that our strategy is quite sharp and distinct, is quite sharp and distinctive. I see City as a technical university, a professional school. By technical university, I mean rather like by analogy, not technological, though it is that, but rather technical university in the sense of the great German technical universities, a university deeply rooted in work. What we do is we take talented, socially mobile, diverse students, and principally from London, and we get them great, well-paying jobs and professional careers in the City of London. And we're really proud to do that. That is our mission. That is our mission. We don't aspire to be, and are not, a sort of inverted commas general liberal university. We are applied and deeply embedded in our environment and context. We're porous. Increasingly, our staff are not just educators and researchers, they're also practitioners. And I think that gives the institution a very different character. This is a professional workplace.
How fascinating. And I wonder if I can probe a bit further at that. You've used the word technical as opposed to technological in that, and you talked about your business school as being an early feature of the university, and you've got your own particular discipline expertise in computer science and engineering, as you've described. I wonder, thinking about the focal point and where any specialism in City has or might have emerged for its teaching and research, that the extent to which that has occurred across different disciplines or not, and which ones has been the focus, whether there's been a distinctive choice made about the balance of undergraduate and postgraduate teaching provision, given where you are, and in the markets for students that you have the greatest potential to serve, given that you're recruiting Londoners for careers in London, and what a fantastic city and a fantastic economy that is. I wonder if you can articulate for me what the choices and issues have been under your leadership of choosing any point of focus with that differentiation in mission that you see that City has.
Okay, so I don't necessarily, a focus on profession and practice doesn't necessarily imply particular domains. And I think, you know, if you look, for example, another area which City has noted for excellence, you can look at, for example, journalism. So here you have communications, but with a unique professional professional focus. We've recently extended our performing arts, but our performing arts, this is not, this is because of our need to serve the professional skills needed by the creative industries of London. So an orientation to practicing a profession doesn't necessarily imply that a particular set of subject areas. And another example might be, you know, we're bringing together, we've brought together, you know, sociology, international politics, and economics in support of a professional agenda in policy and global affairs. So that's what we characterize it. City certainly in its earlier days, I mean, was quite substantially a postgraduate in institution. We have increasingly expanded our undergraduate education. Our postgraduate has remained more or less static. I don't think that's necessarily ideal. It reflects the markets and demands that we serve and are pleased to serve. Thus, for example, we're pleased that we are, you know, one of the best places to have sort of, you know, business school education for undergraduates. But would I say the balance was perfect? Probably not. If you ask me, the last part of your question, I think, was about, you know, what are the principal challenges that that I've been addressing. The first is clarity of mission and strategy, and making quite sure that we are true to that. I think the second is to make quite sure that we are as collectively efficient and effective as we need to be as an institution. The third is that in a period of challenge for the higher education sector, I mean financial challenge for the higher education sector, I've been fairly committed to the idea that that is exactly the moment when one should take a little bit of, one should take risks and craft a distinctive approach.
Well, I don't know if this is one of your principal risks, but what I've read with great interest that you've decided to do is to embark upon the leadership of a new merged institution between City and St George's University of London. Maybe this is more of an opportunity than a risk, I'm sure you're going to tell us, but I know very little about St George's, and I wonder if you can start off by telling us what is the nature of that institution that you're merging with, and why is this merger taking place?
I can definitely do that. Firstly, you know, all opportunities bring in their tail, in their wake, risks. So I don't distinguish the two. Of course, inaction is risky too in the current environment. And that's something I try and make quite sure there's there is some clarity on. So St George's is a has been a standalone College of the University of London member institution of the University of London Is a health and medical school, calls itself a healthcare university with some justice. Has approximately about 5,000 students. Embedded in St George's Hospital, which is one of the great London teaching hospitals, and probably thus at the heart of South London. If you're in South London, everybody knows St George's, and many people have spent time there. St George's is probably the last of the sort of independent, you know, inverted quotes, medical schools in London. Most of those merged into other colleges of the University of London in the late 80s, early 90s. I was at Imperial when St Mary's merged with Imperial, Middlesex and the Free with UCL, Barts and the London with QMU, with QMUL, and a whole range of, you know, others, Charing Cross, Westminster, and so on and so forth. But George's, some senses, stood alone, building an independent profile, but that was increasingly difficult for it to sustain, and that's not so much. That's not purely a difficult to sustain from a sort of financial and operational point of view, but from the from an intellectual and professional point of view. And for a period, George's had a discussion about. There were discussions about relationships with other institutions, but finally there was a decision to merge with us.
That's very interesting. And look, as I understand it, the history of university mergers in the UK, but also worldwide, has been littered with many potential mergers being explored, and fewer actually then ending up getting attempted. And a smaller number, perhaps, of mergers that have really publicly, in the public gaze, led to what might be seen as significant success and transformation and outcomes. The Manchester University of Manchester and UMIS merger is often cited as one of the most successful in the readings that I make. I wonder what you think the challenges will be in the implementation of this particular merger, and what benefits that you're foreseeing in bringing this merger off?
I mean, the first thing to say is that the first thing to observe is that the incorporation of the standalone health and medical schools into the College of the University of London has largely been a highly successful endeavor, and has from my experience, Imperial College, I mean, was a highly regarded engineering and technology and school, but it wasn't the world-class university it is now prior to the engagement with biomedicine, and similarly, I don't think you could envisage QMUL as part of the Russell Group without Barts and the London. And then you look around UCL, School of Pharmacy, Institute of Education, say those are successful merchants, not without their bumps and lumps. I saw about some of those close too, but I think, you know, on the whole, you judge those to be successes. So there are successes along the way. You know, the things that, clearly they're not without risk. In all sorts of regards. Contrary to popular opinion, you know, the costs of a merger are significant and show up long before the benefits show up. Cultural integration is difficult. You know, particularly difficult where you have multiple campuses and so on. So, you know, they're not without risks, but if you can get them right, the intellectual and practical benefits are overwhelming.
Do you think we'll see a lot more mergers like this in the UK in the future? I've been talking with a number of your peers at Loughborough and at University of East Anglia and observing the challenging financial situation facing UK universities. Are we entering in an era when mergers might become widespread amongst UK universities?
Well, one thing I can certainly counsel my other Vice-Chancellor colleagues is that, having worked on this now for some period, mergers are not an answer to a financial challenge. Proper mergers are not an answer to a financial challenge because, as I said before, costs show up substantially and quickly prior to operational efficiencies being yielded.
Yes.
So they're not an answer to a financial challenge. Sometimes, you know, they might be if a merger is effectively a sell-off of a business and the integration of a particular line. So basically an institution folding its business into another, maybe in that circumstance.
Yes.
But generally, no. Do I think that, yes, I do. I do think actually we're going to see more mergers, and should. There are too many small and fragmentary institutions, including the plethora of private institutions, and that's not a sustainable sector. So I would expect to see. More mergers.
Well, that's putting it very clearly. My first exposure to you was when you were very clearly talking about your core discipline. I listened to an excellent podcast that you participated in a year ago with two other friends of mine in Rose Luckin and Ant Bagshaw, together with Julie Greenwood of Ed Plus at ASU, a place that I've come to know quite well. It was an episode sponsored by the US edtech company called Chegg. And there's lots to unpack in all there. But in reflecting on the ASU story on this podcast and the way that they partner with the edtech world, going all the way back to your early days of being intrigued by Lego and other advanced technologies and liking working with people, I guess the answer to this is obvious, but how important do you believe partnerships with tech companies are to the challenges facing global universities right now as they navigate the current landscape?
I mean, massively important, and this dominates my thinking at the moment. at the moment. So, you know, it's no secret. I'm very clear here in the institution. I believe that the sector, our business of higher education, is being massively digitally disrupted. And that it is, I believe, only addressing our overall financial sustainability challenges, which interestingly are actually global because of the expansion of higher education, will only be done through the creative use of technology. Though I also believe that technology, with all that it brings with it, has the potential to significantly improve the quality and delivery of education. The scale and pace of that disruption means that even the largest and most capable university will not be able to do this on their own. We are going to have to do that through partnership, and probably through new types of vehicle. I'm not convinced that we can do it entirely within universities as they stand.
That's fascinating.
Urgent, immediate, and pressing. And if we do not address the issues that arise, it will be existential.
That's pretty direct and clear, Anthony. You see it as serious as that. And do you believe as many other vice chancellors of UK and other global universities share your view of how pressing and existential that threat is and are getting on with it quickly enough?
Firstly, let me say, I don't think I'm getting on with it quickly enough. And that, hence my worry. Despite the fact that I believe it, I think there are a substantial body of vice chancellors who probably share that view. I may be on the outer edge of that, but I think there are a substantial number that shape my view. But there's always a thing which is that you can sort of recognize it, but then actually doing something about it doesn't. I'll tell you a story. I remember seeing the Google search engine for the first time. I was visiting a friend at MIT. I was spending a period in Boston. And before that, I'd been using another search engine, a Meta search engine. It was quite interesting. And I saw it, and I immediately recognized that this was a transformational technology. I could immediately see the power that was yielded by the increased accuracy that a search engine like that was able to yield. He should have gone out, should have gone away from that meeting and bought shares. Mm-hmm. I should have gone away from that meeting and you immediately acted on the insight, but I didn't. And, honestly, in advertising, I've made quite a bit of money on tech startups. So it's not like I'm averse to being entrepreneurial and everything like that. Nevertheless, I didn't act on it. I have a similar recollection of seeing the what then called the MIT training rings, which showed digital convergence between phones and televisions and music, other media, and networked communication. And I remember sort of seeing it and going, yeah, of course, I know that. But did I do anything about it? Did I actually, at that moment, follow the insight? No. And I think, you know, I think many of us are like that. I'm determined not to make that same error again. Determined not to make that same error again.
Well, look, that's a very sobering note to finish of existential threat that even though it's staring us in the face, too many of us might be reluctant to respond to. Is there any closing message?
I mean, don't take this negatively. I mean, don't take it negatively. If we're able to fulfill the potential of these technologies, we will be able to deliver improved quality, hyper-personalization, better things, lifelong learning. I mean, the opportunity is immense, and for the good for universities and for higher education. We just need to do something about it.
What a beautiful note to finish on, Anthony. Thank you very much for being our guest on HEDX.
Martin.
Have a great day.
And you.
A message about having a good day indeed, or having a day when we all need to reckon with the challenges of the day and find new ways forward to face the realities that are staring us in the face. Anthony called them existential. I don't think he's being overdramatic. I think he's being, from an informed position, realistic about the predicament of certainly UK universities, and I dare say universities and colleges in many other parts of the world. So I hope you all enjoyed some lessons to be learned from London, from the City University Vice Chancellor and President Anthony Finkelstein. But that's all we've got time for this week on HEDX.